You are listening to Think Theory Radio.
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 Radio. Radio. Radio.
Hello and welcome to Think Theory Radio, the show that brings you topics outside the mainstream realm of thought and ideas to make you think. And I'm your host, Damian Perdue, your guide on this metaphysical ride through audio delights. And of course, I'm joined by the one and only Pauly C.
Yo, yo, yo.
A.K.A. Pablo Chicago.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, guy.
How's it going there?
Hey there, buddy.
No, yeah. Polish with onions.
Right. You got a bratwurst?
Yeah.
Give me an old style.
Extra jardinier.
Well, I don't know how I can segue out of that into the topic.
But Chicago does not endorse Pablo Chicago.
Right. That's a really good rap name, though, man, if you ever start a rap career.
Okay.
Pablo Chicago, man. I could see it selling millions.
I always wanted to do Skittle with a backwards K, but that was back when like Eminem kind of first broke onto the scene.
So it's been
like a whole generation since that. So maybe it's time to update.
Yeah. Well, now that you know, they're all using their own names. There's no more. There's not really too much of the nom de plumes in the rap world, you know.
Like Jeezy, Yeezy, Geezy.
Yeah, I guess there is still, but you have like a lot of Breezy. You know, Sean Carter and all these kind of using their, you know, Kendrick Lamar. They're using their own names, you know. But you know, that's neither here nor there. I mean, we could turn this into a whole rap discussion. I don't mind that, you know. I can talk for hours about rap music.
Specifically me, who can't rap at all, and turning me into a future rapper.
Hey, I could teach you, man.
That's cool.
You know,
spitting bars by 7 o'clock.
Right. Everything's learnable.
Yeah.
You know? I guess, you know, in a way to like kind of segue into the topic.
Would I use my rap powers for
good or evil?
There you go.
And also, if you think about rap in general, you have some people that deem it as evil, right? Like gangster rap and stuff
That was an easy target for like the senator's wives back in the 80s. Yeah.
Tipper Gore and PMRC. I don't know if you remember that. That was the...
What was the parents?
Parents something... Racist.
But I
think
love,
it stood for parents are racist but, against but music the, of color.
The three dudes, the three artists that represented the entire music industry, though, crack me up, though. It's Frank Zappa.
Yeah.
Dee
Snider.
Dee Snider from
Twisted Sister.
Thank you. And then John Denver.
Yeah. I think John Denver was the best, too. Like, I forget, but he said some, like, really eloquent stuff. And,
the
guy you would think would not want to defend rap or, like, heavy metal was totally defending it.
Mm-hmm.
And, but that's actually ties into the question of morality and what I want to get into is the age-old question that has plagued humanity since the dawn of civilization.
And that is?
Where did good and evil come from?
Oh, good question.
You know, and similar to that, the kind of the objective viewpoint of what good and evil is and how it differentiates between people and between cultures and between situations, our own decision making. And it's a question that has, you know, philosophers and ethicists and theologians and scientists and neuroscientists have all pondered for generations and thousands of years. And it's something that we'll probably never figure out, but I think we can figure it out right here on this show in less than an hour.
All right.
That's our challenge for today.
People. Clock's ticking.
Right. And if you have the answer to the question of what is good and evil, where did good and evil come from, hit us up at 773-763-WCPT. That's 773-763-9278. I'd love to hear the listener's perspective on what you think good and evil is and what it represents and where did you learn it from? Where were you taught good and evil? What was your first instance of recognizing that? I know in my own life, I was probably more of an evil kid than I was a good kid. But later, I became a morally responsible adult.
When did you make the turn?
I think it was when I started smoking weed.
Okay.
Actually, I mean, I'm being honest with you, like
that
straight
devil
up.
Reefer.
Yeah, I think it actually instilled morality in me.
Started staying up late and listening to jazz music.
I was like,
and
I started feeling compassion for the rest of humanity, man.
And, all wars are started by people over 40, man.
Right. And it was, you know, I don't know if it was, you know, there was also when I was going through puberty, so I don't know if that was part of it. But I was a kid. Like, as a kid, I had no problem. Like,
I was definitely a jerk teenager. I mean, I know that.
I mean, I would slingshot rocks at squirrels and pigeons, mm-hmm. and I had no care of it, you know. But then mm-hmm. I became vegetarian when I was 17 and had a more of, a much larger moral compass, compassion for all creatures of God, if you say, or nature or whatever. And but I do think it had to do with cannabis. I don't know. I think it chilled me out. It made me a little bit more aware of.
But that's what made you good, is what you're saying.
I don't know if it made me good. I've always.
You said it made you evil.
No. Okay, the opposite.
Okay.
No, I was gonna say the opposite. Yeah. Which is kind of funny, you know, when you think about, they call it the devil's weed, or
Lettuce. Yeah,
devil's lettuce. And for me it was a little different, but. Anyway, that's a different topic. It's the same topic, but maybe that's a different show.
But there are several shows on cannabis that you can reference.
Mm-hmm. Several. But I always find it fascinating, like, when you think about good and evil, like, what we mainly, I think, go back to is religion, right?
Mm-hmm.
And especially, well, here in the States, it's mostly a Christian nation. We think of the story of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, right? And how these were, you know, two humans. Of course, there was Lilith, and then, you know, that's a whole other thing. But
what?
You don't know about Lilith?
I don't know about Lilith.
Lilith was the first woman.
Okay.
But she was too rebellious, and God killed her, and then created Eve because she was more subservient.
Hmm.
And that's why God created Eve from the rib of Adam or whatever, or something like that. But, I'm not a theologian. So I'm not gonna...
baby.
Great song. We should play that. But if you think about it, now, I believe that most stories in religion are metaphors, right? So the story, you know, I mean, pretty much everyone knows it, right? They were frolicking fancy free in the Garden of Eden, and they weren't wearing clothes, and they were fine with their nudity. But then they bit of the apple of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, tempted by the snake of Satan, and they became aware. The first thing that happened to them was they received shame, and they noticed that they were naked, and they had to cover themselves, which is also an interesting concept of why is nudity perceived as evil, right? Or why is that associated with it? Why is sexuality in a lot of religions associated with some kind of evil thoughts and perverse nature? And, it also stems from that same story. And then eventually God just kicked him out of the garden. It was like, hey, I told you guys not to eat from that tree. Now you know about good and evil. You got to go out into the world and survive. And then boom, boom, boom. Generations later, you had Jesus and whatever. And that's supposedly the thing, is that Adam couldn't resist the temptation. And then Jesus later did resist the temptation. Right. But I think it's a metaphor of how humans lived with the cycle of Earth and with nature for thousands of years. If you think about, the Paleolithic people, they, you know, for hundreds of thousands of years were hunter-gatherers, and they didn't kill more than they could eat. They kept whatever, you know, clothes on their back. They were nomadic. They didn't really slash and burn places. And it wasn't until they created city-states, which spawned from agriculture and irrigation, when we decided to sit still, that things became political and you became more aware of the concepts of good and evil. And you had people who, basically from then on, you've had wars, right? Ever since the first civilization, we've pretty much been in a constant state of war on this planet. There's always been a war going on somewhere, or multiple wars. And so I think that was kind of like what the story of Adam and Eve was, is that we existed with nature, we learned too much, we thought we were better than nature, that we could control nature, and that was what birthed civilization. which has brought us to where we are now in modern times, and how it's, you know, we're ruled by different people. There's constantly, you know, different ethical battles in our own mind and within our own country. You know, we can perceive things that our own country has done to other countries as evil. And you have other countries that also perceive that in that way. You have people who call, you know, America the great Satan. And what is that? You know, what, where does that come from? And if you think about in terms of psychology, is it just decision making? Is it just your ability to think about a situation and have enough determination to make the right choice instead of, you know, acting on emotion or not really thinking about the repercussions of where that's going to lead you? And we tend to break down the concept of good and evil as good being someone with a moral compass and somebody who's empathic, somebody who's compassionate, somebody who understands their fellow man. And somebody who's evil is typically somebody who's narcissistic, who lacks empathy, and who is, you know, sociopathic. Now, where does that come from, though, in the brain? Is that something that is inherent in humans? Is that something that's inherent in nature? Is it older than humanity? Because, and this, you know, may sound weird, but if you think about animals, do animals experience good and evil? Do they have that even a concept, even the ones who are a little more advanced, like dolphins or primates, or even crows? Crows are very advanced.
I have two cats, and I definitely believe that animals know the difference between good and evil.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are, what is one of them good and one of them evil?
They're both pretty evil,
yeah.
And I think one of them knowingly, well, actually, no, both of them, like, knowingly are just jerks.
Yeah. See, but I wonder, were they born that way, or is that a learned behavior? Did they learn it from their human masters, right?
I don't know.
Like children, are they born good or evil? You know, sometimes you meet a little kid and you're like, that's an evil little kid, you know, but...
it has, like, the sweetest parents.
Right.
You know?
Exactly. And it's like, you know, where does that come from? Is it just some neurons misfiring in the brain? Is it something learned? Could it be something as simple as they saw, you know, a TV show, and there was a weird scene of, you know, murder or something like that, and it impacted their brain and changed them, you know, chemically altered their brain. And but is good and evil inherent in the universe? Is it older than humanity? Is it, you know, if there's life on other planets, right? We tend to think in humanistic values that these aliens would also have, but we don't know that. There could be planets where these beings have no sense of good or evil. Maybe they operate on pure logic, like the Vulcans from Star Trek, right? Where they don't perceive good and evil, or maybe they don't see it within their own mind. Maybe they can judge it from afar, but they don't actually act upon any kind of situation as good or evil. So at this point, because we haven't really met any aliens that we know of, we don't know if this exists throughout the universe. We only know good and evil in relation to ourselves.
Yeah, but you would have known this Wednesday had you voted for Bernie Sanders instead of Joe Biden, because he said he was going to reveal that stuff.
Oh, yeah. Well, supposedly Trump did the executive order that this is one of the last executive orders he signed, is to make the Pentagon release all their information about UFOs within 180 days. So we'll see if Biden decides to do that.
Right. Yeah.
And then we'll find out if aliens are evil.
And with Trump, I don't know whether to believe that or if,
I know.
That was just something he'd do.
And it could be just some kind of weird catering to his base or something. You know what I mean? Maybe he saw something on an 8chan thread about UFOs. And
oh, that's a great idea.
Right? This will get them to support me more. And that's, but you know, that brings up a good thing too, is like when you think about good and evil, like Trump, you know, to me, I perceive him as evil, but does he perceive himself that way?
Obviously he does not.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think with most narcissists and sociopaths, they don't consider themselves evil. Let's say Hitler, you know, is great at, you know, did some of the worst, most atrocious things in human history. And we look at him as, you know, might as well be the spawn of the devil. But did he see himself that way? He thought he was doing good. You know, he perceived the Jewish people as evil and that he was, you know, doing something beneficial to the world by getting rid of them. So what is that, you know?
I guess it depends on your calibration, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's, well, like, you have people here who buy into whatever religion and say, you know, Muslims are evil. And then, like I said earlier, in some Islamic circles, they call, you know, America the Great Satan. It's a matter of perception.
Right.
And I could easily say that things that we have done as a country to Middle Eastern countries and to people there, innocent people who get, you know, bombed by drone strikes, of course they would perceive us as evil, because why would we do that to innocent people, right? But in our mind, it's like, well, we're doing it to prevent terrorism, so we're doing good, right? So before I get into a little more, I know we have, should we take the caller now or after the break?
Let's do after the break.
All right. Yeah. We'll be back with more Think Theory Radio and your calls right after this.
Because facts matter. You are listening to WCPT 820.
Welcome back to Think Theory Radio. This is Damien, and today we are talking about the origins of good and evil. Where does it come from? Where do they come from? How do we know what it is? And I have some studies from neuroscientists and psychologists and also quantum physicists who are weighing in on the whole good and evil topic. But before we get to that, let's take some callers. We're going to get to Brian in Albuquerque. What's going on, Brian?
Hey, good evening. Just as an example, imagine the Vikings getting ready to raid a small hamlet and they're contemplating good and evil. Do you think that really happened?
Exactly.
I don't think it did.
Right. And did they perceive themselves as evil? Because I'm sure the hamlet that they were raiding saw them as evil.
I doubt it. I think it's tribalism and human competition. It's the ultimate competition is life and death, blood sport, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, imagine like the three of us are brothers and we're living out in the wild off the land and we're half starved. We haven't eaten anything in 2 weeks of substantial nourishment. And we come across an encampment and we're smelling meat cooking and there's young women there and everything else. So what are our motivations?
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people say, well, hey, let's walk in and be friends. Other people might say, let's wait till they go to sleep and then we'll form a raiding party and then we'll slaughter all the males, take all the meat and take all the women.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, would you call that evil?
I mean, in my moralistic sense, I would say yes. But
I mean, we're animals, right? We descended from animals. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're living on the edge of starvation and you're not getting anything to eat and you don't have a sexual partner, mm-hmm. what are your motivations?
Right. It's survival.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. And it's kill or be killed. That's what they see in the wild, that what was in front of them. They knew if they came across the wrong tribe or the wrong person, they would be killed. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I get it.
I mean, that's where it stems from. That's where I think it comes from. And then, you know, we got more agrarian and settled, and then, you'd raise a family, and you're a member of a clan. So mm-hmm. if you're a member of a certain clan, you want to protect your assets. You want to protect your herd. You want to protect your farmland. You want to protect your women.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And if someone comes in the night and steals your goats and steals some of your daughters, they've done evil to you. I mean, there it is. That's the concept, good and evil.
Right. No, I get the concepts, but what I wonder is it inherent in us? Like you said, we come from animals, right? We come from the animal kingdom. Do animals perceive good and evil then? Like does a bison think a lion is evil because it's constantly hunting them?
I don't think it's just a predator. It's something that will
kill
them.
Instinct.
It's like falling off a cliff.
So right. So is the decision of good and evil only human because we have a consciousness? We have a different. We have a higher consciousness. Are we the only ones that can perceive it?
Right, but I mean, it ultimately, it's competition. I mean, there was a great documentary about lions versus the hyenas, and lions will kill hyenas just to kill them. They don't kill them to eat them. They kill them because they're in competition for prey.
Mm.
And hyenas will kill other hyenas. You know, mankind is the ultimate predator when you boil it down. I mean, we've killed off more animals and species than any other thing that's existed on Earth, right?
Yeah, that's definitely true. And especially in recent years, we've killed off so many species.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. I hear you, man.
Amen.
Amen. All right, Brian, I want to thank you for the call. Yeah, you too, man.
Bye.
I appreciate it. And
you know, I think of I don't think hamsters go through the moral conundrum of eating their children, you know,
right.
You know, like it just that, you know, I think it's a man-made concept, I guess, good and evil when you really boil it down.
Exactly. I think it's that I think it is definitely a mankind concept, but also it seems to really tie into religious aspects, at least where we are now in human history. We've built up all these different religions that really tend to express deep concerns about good and evil, you know. And I think that for the most part, except for like Buddhism, religions have kind of propelled good and evil, or almost more evil, if you think about it. I mean, wars have been fought in the name of religion. People kill other people of other beliefs just because they believe their belief is evil, or their God's the evil God and my God's the good God, even though it's all the same. But, you know, but this has been for, you know, eons, this has been going on, and it's all just this kind of perception and, you know, these moral dilemmas. It's kind of like if you were standing on a train platform and the train was coming down the track and it's going to hit five people, right? But there's this really big guy standing there that if you pushed him in front of the train, he would stop the train and save the five people, but you would kill the one guy. You know, is it better, you know, the lives of the many over the lives of the one?
Yeah, that's like what the picture with like the train switch, and you have like the one person on one side and the four on the other. But it's like you have the attachment to the one person, like it might be a family member or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was reading a good story. It's an anecdote or whatever, but it was about the seminarian who was talking about after Hurricane Katrina, and he was helping a lot of the people who were displaced and homeless, and they were in one of the shelters, and they were feeding them and everything. And he said this woman who came in, and she was kind of rich, and she was from the suburbs, and she was super Christian. And she said, well, what do you expect? Of course God was going to punish New Orleans. New Orleans is evil. And all the people sitting there are like, what? Like, they're all from New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
So an older lady who's, you know, was one of the people who were displaced kind of spoke up, and she said, well, Lordy, I'm glad my God isn't your God, because the Jesus I know loves everyone, and my God is a loving God, and a storm is just a storm.
Yeah.
You know? But these, like, that perception of that, like, God.
That's always been, yeah, like, major storms, major catastrophes, trying to justify it as if, oh, this is a sign from God.
Yeah.
It shouldn't have been. Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen people say about the wildfires, you know, in Brazil and Australia. Well, it's God punishing, you know.
New Orleans shouldn't have been listening to that jazz music once again.
And smoking that devil's lettuce.
Yeah. You want to take the next call?
Yeah, let's take the next call.
All right, we got Randy from Ravenswood.
All right, Randy, what you got for us?
Hi, how are you doing?
Great,
how are
you
doing? Your show. Well,
thank you.
When you posed the question, I immediately thought of a scene in the movie, the 2001 Space Odyssey. It's the part where you see the monolith. I don't know if you've seen the movie, but there's
the monolith.
There's a scene where there's a monolith, and then there's there's a number of apes that have sticks in there.
Mm-hmm.
They're hitting. I think the ground or something.
It's I know the scene. It's what the they're fighting over the little pond that they can drink from and bathe in and whatnot. And once the apes discover bones can be used as tools and weapons,
so you have a better memory than I do.
I'm a big fan of Kubrick. We've referenced 2001 a few times on the show.
But the reason I mention that, and I think why it came to mind, I think evil starts first. It is because of our aggression. We are an aggressive, and I think it, I'm sure that has something to do with our biology. And out of that aggression creates power relationships. And in any type of power relationship, you're going to have like a pecking order, or one's going to be dominant, one's going to be, you know, less dominant. And I think that's where the outcome of that relationship comes evil. And I think good comes out of just a response. It's the counterpoint of evil. You know, sometimes you can succeed by being good against evil, and of course other times you can't. But I'm thinking, so basically, you know, no great philosophical thing, but I think it comes out of our own aggression. You know, you see children, they can be really aggressive and mean to each other, but they can also be taught to be nice to each other. So good and evil can also be, I think, a learned behavior.
Well, that's definitely what a lot of psychologists believe, that it's a learned behavior for sure.
Yeah. So that's what came to my mind when you came on. You immediately said good and evil. That image of that movie, the aggression, and that came to mind. So pretty much what I had to say. Nothing more than that. I'm sure there's lots of different theories out there.
Oh, for sure, for
sure. Where it all comes from, and I think religion. I'll end up by saying, I think religion messes up our understanding of it, because it quotes all the basic concept of good and evil to all this mythology and this belief of this is what's going to happen to you after you die, or someone has greater knowledge than you, but you know, you don't really know until you die. But I think it confuses things. Religion confuses things from the basic our relationship. So that's kind of what I wanted to say.
All right, Randy. You know, I agree with you, man, and thanks for the call. And kind of piggyback on what you're saying, I think that one of the things, you know, which what religion does is that we always have to have something behind the scenes controlling everything, right? And it's similar too with a lot of like conspiracy theories and the Illuminati controlling the world, and there's evil cabals and everything. But religion has always had that aspect, and it also gives people this kind of buffer to say, well, it wasn't my choice, you know, the devil made me do it.
Okay.
You know, and it kind of gives people that freedom of free will. You know, like in religion, free will isn't kind of really a thing. Free will is more, you know, the modern era and, you know, philosophers and psychologists. But if you think about religion, it's always that God made the choice, right? Or the devil made the choice. But when you get too deep into it, you think about, okay, well, how, if God is a good God, why would he create another being that was evil? And in the early, really, like Hinduism and other religions like that, they had many gods. There wasn't a one god or two god. It wasn't until the Zoroastrianism and the Zoroaster who created the concept of a one god, a monotheistic religion.
Yeah, monotheology.
Yeah, the Ahura Mazda. And then the other one is Anga Mainyu, I believe, is the kind of shadow of God. So that would be the considered the devil, although they never really labeled it the devil. Even in the Old Testament and the early New Testament and the Bible, there isn't really reference to Satan as a fallen angel. That came later in the Gospels. So these concepts are kind of like added in by people, right? So is it, you know, what Randy was saying, is it we're inherently born aggressive, or even Brian said the similar thing, that we were born this way, that humans have always been to have this aggressive nature. So is it something in our brain? Is it chemical? You know, is it something biological that we could change?
Well, I think Brian was trying to raise the point that it's like a competitive sort of thing.
Right. But exactly. Oh, yeah. They use more of the competitive, like, or a kind of survival nature and what we would have to do. And I found this study about a neuroscientist trying to figure out can they deduce what in the brain makes good and evil? And it says, you know, for two decades, researchers have scanned and analyzed the brains of psychopaths and murderers, but they haven't pinpointed any single source of evil in the brain. And this is with Harvard brain scientist Joshua Buchholz. And he says, is that our folk concepts of good and evil are much more complicated and multifaceted and riven with uncertainty than we ever thought possible before. In other words, so much for the old idea that we have an angel on one shoulder and devil on the other, and that morality is simply a battle between the two. Using new technology, brain researchers are beginning to tease apart the biology that underlies our decisions to behave badly or do good deeds. They've even been experimenting with ways to alter our judgments of what is right and wrong and our deep gut feelings of moral conviction. And it says, in past years, as neuroscientists and psychologists began to delve into morality, many of us were after a moral center of the brain or a particular system or circuit that was responsible for all of morality, says Assistant Professor Leanne Young, who runs the Morality Lab at Boston College. I just like that name, the Morality Lab.
I didn't know Boston College had a morality lab.
Now you do. But it turns out that morality can't be located in any one area or even set of areas, that it's all over, that it colors all aspects of our life. And that's why it takes up so much space in the brain. So there's no root of all evil. Rather, Buchholz says, when we do brain studies of moral decision making, what we are led into an understanding that there are many different paths to antisocial behavior. And they also, in the study, they're actually working on changing the brain chemistry with commonly used drugs. You can shift people's decision making. So they say if you give people a drug called citalopram, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right, or citalopram, which increases negative emotion short term, then you can change the way they think about decision makings. And the same if you give people an anti-anxiety drug, then they're more likely to be like, push the guy in front of the train that will save the five people.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing different studies using a device about the size of two donuts stuck together with a handle, delivers a magnetic field to stimulate the brain area just above the subject's right ear. Meanwhile, they read statements and decide whether they're more likely fact or opinion. And it goes through a bunch of different kind of moral dilemmas. And they say, we're starting to see that we can shift around people's perceptions of what feels objectively right. And that may be hard for people to accept. People tend to think of moral judgments as very central to their character. So showing people that their judgments and their perceptions are flexible when it comes to morality is pretty striking. So,
you know that drugs will change someone's mindset.
Right. I just told you earlier, cannabis made me a good person.
Saying, give a person enough alcohol and they're going to make some terrible decisions.
Right. And that's what I was thinking, too, is like if you think about drugs and alcohol, some people will just deem that as evil in itself, right? That if, you know, if I told people, well, I like to smoke weed and drink some beers, some people with high religious morals will say, well, that's evil in itself. You're being influenced by the devil because you like to drink beer and smoke weed. So, you know, where do we go from there? Well, we're going to go to a commercial and we'll take your calls when we come back with more Think Theory Radio right after this.
WCPT 820, Chicago's progressive talk, where facts matter.
Welcome back to Think Theory Radio. This is Damien, and today we're having a great discussion on the concepts of good and evil and the origins of morality and what makes us make bad decisions. Is it just too many shots of whiskey?
Sometimes.
That's made me make it. Not going to go there right now. But I'm going to get to a little bit about this quantum physics study about predicting human behavior and a little bit about some philosophers' take on good and evil. But before that, we're going to go back to the phone calls and take Earl in Hyde Park. What's going on, Earl?
Hey, buddy. Interesting topic today.
Thank you.
And kind of fits into one of the things I have a dilemma about.
Okay.
And when you see what's happened in the Capitol building this week,
mm-hmm.
there are a lot of people there that said they were told to come and do what they did. Now, they were so brazen and so sure that what they were doing was good that they didn't even hide their faces from the camera. They spoke to the news reporters. My point is I'm trying to get to is within the confines of our society, there are certain norms that are different in communities than in the other.
Mm-hmm.
For example, you know, that I was black, so obviously I have slave ancestry, and it was okay to treat slaves any way that they wanted to because we were still deemed as inhuman.
Mm.
We were defined as not human beings. So therefore, you could do with your cattle any kind of way that you wanted to. You could treat them any kind of way you wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
And so how does that relate to your topic today? I mean, because it looks like society can have different norms than norms.
And that's, you know, that's an excellent point. And actually, I was thinking of several of those things that you mentioned when I was thinking of the topic, especially the invasion of Capitol Hill, because like you said, those people believe that they were doing good. And a lot of these Trump supporters, especially like the QAnon followers, they really believe they're on some kind of like the force of God and that like they're fighting this evil cabal and it's all about, you know, that they're doing God's work. Right. So they definitely perceive something as good. And then when you bring up slavery, that's an even more excellent point because it's so obvious how evil that was to treat people that way for hundreds of years. But the slave masters and the majority of people in this country thought it was OK and believed that because in their eyes that Africans were more primitive than Europeans, that what they were doing was okay. And that because the Africans didn't believe in Christianity, that this was, you know, that they deemed them, like you said, as animals or something, you know, something less than human. So for them...
Go ahead. I got one quick thing in one of my philosophy classes. The professor said...
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't believe it at the time, that the Native Americans weren't human because they hadn't invented the wheel.
Mm.
So his point was, therefore, the Europeans could do whatever they want to this land and take it from them because they weren't even fit to be considered.
Wow.
Because, you know. So, yeah, so I just wanted to bring that up, and I'm going to listen to you keep reflecting on that. But, you know, yeah, this is a good topic today. All right, thank you.
Thank you, Earl. And that's some excellent points, and I love the subjects you brought up. And that last one, man, I can't believe that professor told you something like that. Because that's so...
Oh, yeah.
That's so insane, especially if you actually knew about Native American history and all the contributions that they have given to society, all the different just technological devices, but also, you know, political formations. I mean, the House of Representatives is basically based on the tribal council. And it's just outrageous to me that somebody would think because they didn't invent the wheel, you know. I mean, you look at the Mayans, they didn't have the wheel either, but they were one of the most advanced civilizations in the world. But that's exactly this concept of good and evil, you know, and the morality of it all and how people will look at another culture or another person and in their perception of it, that they're not good, that they can do whatever they want to them. Right. And that's been happening, you know, for years and years and years. So that's one aspect. But I wanted to get into a couple philosophers and then also this quantum physics getting into the area of predicting what good and evil is or human behavior. And I'll go from where's my Carl Jung? My Carl Jung. He had some good. So this is what Carl Jung says. Sin is considered to be the opposition of the human will to the divine will. It is also said to be unavoidable, and there are many examples through the centuries that attest to this. But if we think that God were responsible for the original sin, there would be no more mystery about sin. Adam and Eve would indeed have been inadequate people if they had not noticed which tree the right apples grew on. Man is never by himself. There are always two. His will is always crossed by a good and bad desire, which unfortunately cannot be combined. But who says they are not both the same? Our human criteria of good and evil are open to criticism. Good can grow out of evil, and out of good can come evil. All these considerations show us that we need to revise the Christian conception of God. And that's Carl Jung, famous psychologist and philosopher. And I like that one of the best quotes from Albert Einstein when it comes to talking about God is, well, before that one, I just like this other quote he says, because we're going to get into the quantum mechanics thing. He says, "Quantum mechanics is certainly imposing, but an inner voice tells me that this is not yet the real thing. The theory yields much, but it hardly brings us closer to the old one's secrets. In any case, I am convinced that he does not play dice," in reference to God. And when asked, does he believe in God? He said, he believes in the Dutch Jewish philosopher Baruch Spinoza's concept of God, which is, "I believe in Spinoza's God, who reveals himself in the lawful harmony of the world, not in a God who concerns himself with the fate and doings of mankind." So what does Spinoza think on evil?
Are you going to give like the mathematical formula for God?
Coming yes.
G
yes.
equals delta X.
I finally figured it out.
Square root of 7. Yeah, you said by the end of the show, so.
Right. I have it ready.
Clock is ticking.
It's on my phone. I have an app for that.
There's a Wikipedia stub yeah. about it.
You don't have the good and evil app? It just tells you what's good and evil. You type it in. Oh, that's bad. Don't do that. It's probably what's going to end up happening. You know, people just have like moral compasses on their phone. Should I kill this person? Let me see. Oh, it's my phone says no. But Spinoza says that all things which exist in nature are either things or actions. Now, good and evil are neither things nor actions. Therefore, good and evil do not exist in nature.
Okay.
So it's only of the human mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So since we talked a little bit about quantum physics, I didn't even think that I would find something that really, because I just was kind of throwing it out there when I was doing some quote unquote research, a.k.a. Googling.
Are you on some good like quantum physics blogs, though? Because you always kind of tie it back into that.
I just find quantum physics fascinating. And, you know, I've talked about it tons on the show. There's something esoteric about it and this like hidden knowledge and how it just like how it's basically studying what we can't see. So it's almost in essence studying the spirit kind of in a way. Right. It's studying the spirit of the universe, like the spirit of matter. It's studying ghosts that we can't perceive. So it's always just I find it very fascinating. And also the way that quantum physics has kind of in a way proved kind of these ancient philosophies right. When you think about Buddhism and Taoism and how they believe that we are all one and we are all connected. And quantum physics has proven that we are all totally related and there is no space between us. You know, we perceive space as something, you know, non-existence in between us, but there is none of that. There's total molecules and neutrinos flying all around and they're all connecting with us. So anyway, that's
okay.
So I just threw it out there when I was searching. I was like, I wonder if quantum physics has anything to say on the dilemma of good and evil, or if quantum physics disproves it. You know, some people believe that quantum physics kind of disproves the existence of God because God wouldn't make something so unpredictable. And then it gets into the whole thing of like theoretical physics and like the many worlds theory, which we talked about before, where it's like every decision you make turns into another universe. Another universe is created off of that, right? So if that's possible, then it would likely seem that God wouldn't be possible. So there's a new physics theory that could predict human behavior, and this is from LifeScience.com. It says quantum physics and human psychology may seem completely unrelated, but some scientists think the two fields overlap in interesting ways. Both disciplines attempt to predict how unruly systems might behave in the future. The difference is that one field aims to understand the fundamental nature of physical particles, while the other attempts to explain human nature. Cognitive scientists found that there are many irrational human behaviors. Zhang, a biophysicist and neuroscientist at the University of Science and Technology of China, says, recent research suggests that these lapses in logic can be well explained by quantum probability theory, Zhang says. Zhang stands among the proponents of so-called quantum cognition. In a new study published last January in the Journal of Nature Human Behavior, he and his colleagues investigated how concepts borrowed from quantum mechanics can help psychologists better predict human decision-making while recording what decisions people made on well-known psychology tasks. The team also monitored the participants' brain activity. The scans highlighted specific brain regions that may be involved in quantum-like thought processes. The study is the first to support the idea of quantum cognition at the neural level, Zhang said. In their new study, Zhang and his colleagues pitted two quantum-based models of decision-making against 12 classical psychology models to see which best predicted human behavior during a psychological task. The experiment, known as the Iowa Gambling Task, is designed to evaluate people's ability to learn from mistakes and adjust their decision-making strategy over time. And it says that that basically they it had the same kind of revelations that the psychological test said, but they said, however, further research is warranted to determine what these brain activity differences truly reflect, and the coupling of the quantum-like models with neurophysiological processes in the brain is a very complex problem. Models of classical reinforcement learning have shown great success in studies of emotion, psychiatric disorders, social behavior, free will, and many other cognitive functions, Zhang said. We hope that quantum reinforcement learning will also shed light on these fields, providing unique insights. In time, perhaps quantum mechanics will help explain pervasive flaws in human logic, as well as how the fallibility it manifests in the level of individual neurons. So there we go. Maybe quantum physics will help us all out. So before, we got a couple minutes left, so let's get to try to squeak in these last callers. Who we got, Paul?
Mike from Evergreen Park is first.
All right, Mike, what's going on?
Hi, how are you?
Good, good. Thanks for calling.
Oh, the reason for my call is I've been listening to your show, and, you know, I was a former electrician, instrument technician.
Okay.
And my thinking is perhaps you can clarify some of this information to me, is that everything in the world can be calculated through mathematics.
Mm-hmm.
Mathematics, you know, three-phase electronics, electrons moving through wires and everything else can be calculated through mathematics. And the mathematics of the world seems to indicate to me that there is a strange change in the mathematics based on the radiation that comes from the sun.
Okay.
Which produces, you know, radiation produces electrical energy.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought you could comment on that.
Well, as far as the sun changing mathematics or the structure and the nature of matter, I mean, it's very possible. So
there's a lot of constants, though, in mathematics.
Yeah.
Though.
I mean, it's radio frequencies and radiation can alter, you know, any kind of matter. So, but I don't know if that would affect decision making upon good and evil. But although you are right, the mathematics is the underlying force, I mean, of the universe, and that's kind of what I call God. I believe God is this mathematical equation that we are too dumb to understand. But I will tell you this, there's a really good documentary. Well, it's actually like a docuseries. There's three parts. It's called The Code. and it's with a mathematician, and he breaks down. So watch that show because it'll explain it better. The questions you're asking, he totally breaks it down in the show. It's called The Code. You can look it up. It's on YouTube, I believe. And he really breaks down the underlying code of the universe, which is mathematics. So let's try to squeak in that last caller. Who we got?
Paul from Chicago. You got like 20 seconds.
Paul, what you got?
I just was wondering, you know, I called before. I was just wondering if you ever talked about Ahmed Goswami and quantum physics.
No, I haven't.
It's worth looking into his books. He says that consciousness is the ground of being.
Okay.
So that's the exact opposite of existentialism. And, of course, you might look into Edgar Cayce, too, and Rudolf Steiner.
Oh, yeah, I know Edgar Cayce, yeah, for
Mahansa,
sure.
Yogananda, all those people.
Yeah, a good one you might...
Yeah, we'll talk about good and evil.
Check out The Tao of Physics by Fridtjof Capra, if you've ever read
it.
Yeah,
I read that a long time ago.
Yeah. Now, what was the name of the physicist you said, or philosopher?
Amit Goswami, Goswami. He was on Channel 11, and he was in a movie, I forgot the name of it, about philosophy.
All right, great.
Okay.
Yeah, hey, thank you so much, and I'm definitely going to look into that. And thanks for all the callers. Great show today. We'll tune in next week. Think Theory Radio every Saturday, 6 to 7 p.m., WCPT 820.